Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode 49. Your story is Schrödinger's cat. Welcome back, everyone, to another round of story structure and story analysis. This episode promises to be a little bit abstract. If you can't tell by the title, which it took me a long time to practice, Schrödinger, it's not Schrodinger. It's Schrödinger. Sorry, I grew up in Southern California. That's how I believed it was pronounced. I had a completely different podcast planned this week, one about an analysis of a really great sci-fi thriller called The One I Love that came out in 2014. I'm still going to do it. It'll be next week, but this popped up in a book I was reading, and I loved how it addressed the purpose of a dramatic story form when it comes to structuring a narrative. I felt like it came into my observation the same time that I was having difficulty with some students in trying to describe the idea that there isn't one perfect story form. It's just the perfect story form that you see in the story that you're going for. So we'll be getting to that later on in the podcast, but just know that this might be one that might kind of venture off into the unknown worlds of narrative structure. It won't be quite as complicated or as verbose or as enlightening as perhaps something that Melanie might say on the StoryMind site or Dramaticopedia site, but it's something in that category. Before we get to all the esoteric, abstract wonders of narrative structure, I want to talk about a brand new analysis that's on the Dramatica website. It's a comprehensive analysis of The Imitation Game, starring Benedict Cumberbatch and Keira Knightley, which came out a couple years ago. And it's a comprehensive analysis, which means that it has every single story point filled out from top to bottom. So if you have the Dramatica Story Expert application, or if you have Dramatica Pro on Windows, the program comes with about 60 different examples of story forms. And instead of just the story form itself, which is what you'll get on my site with the different analyses I've done, I mean, I'll go through and describe some of the story points, but I won't go through and actually fill out the encoding for every single story point. We call that a comprehensive story analysis. And part of the application for becoming a Dramatica certified story expert is to pick a film that hasn't been done yet, obviously, and go through and story encode every single last story point. And then at the very end, once Chris Huntley, one of the co-creators of Dramatica, goes through and evaluates everything that you've written about and makes suggestions for improving it, it gets published onto the site and will eventually be part of the examples in the next version of Dramatica. So the great part about this, which I can toot my horn a little bit, is that John Gentry, who is the analyst behind the Imitation Game story form, was one of my Dramatica mentorship students. In fact, he was the one who basically inspired the whole program. He came to me and we had met at a workshop. I used to do weekend workshops every quarter, which I might end up doing next year. If that's something that you might be interested in, like a weekend workshop, please let me know. The more interest I have in it, the more I'll end up doing it. Because it seemed to go in waves. Sometimes people were really into it and it would fill up, and then some years it would just stop and it was just really random. I couldn't actually figure out what the pattern was. So if that's something you're interested in, please let me know and I can of course make time for it. But we had met at one of those weekend workshops and he showed a proficiency for Dramatica, but he wanted to learn even more. And so he asked, hey, what would you think about teaching me one-on-one everything you know about Dramatica? And then that's how I came up with the Dramatica mentorship program. And so he was the first one to go through the entire program, and then he applied for the Dramatica Story Expert certification, which is not something I do, but something that Chris does, and he passed with flying colors. And it's a really, really great story form. It's very interesting. It's one of my favorite kind of narratives, which is a success bad, which is another reason why I liked The One I Love. I didn't realize that at the time, but that's exactly why I liked it. For success bad, what that means is, if the story outcome is success and the main character or the story judgment is bad, that gives you a personal tragedy story. So everything works out for the majority of people in the story, logistically, you know, it's a success, but it's actually a bad thing for the main character. The classic example was Silence of the Lambs, where she catches the serial killer and returns the senator's daughter, but the lambs are still screaming, so she's in a really bad place. Dark Knight is another real popular one where he becomes the villain that Gotham needs, and you know, he drives off into the night. Now he's the bad guy. So that's another success bad story. And Imitation Game is a success bad story as well. You know, they break the code of the Enigma machine, which, you know, obviously turned the tide in World War II, but Turing himself didn't get to a better place. You know, he died alone, isolated, and not in a really great, fantastic place. It wasn't a Top Gun or Star Wars. You know, it wasn't everybody getting awards and medals. There was success, but it came at a great personal cost. And that is the definition of a personal tragedy. If you haven't seen, I have a series in the vaults of Narrative First where I go over the different meaningful endings. Success good are all the triumphs. Success bad are all the personal tragedies. Failure good are all the personal triumphs. And that's where things don't work out, but it's good for the main character, like The Devil Wears Prada. You know, she doesn't end up being what Miranda wants her to be, but she gets into a better place. She feels better about herself. And of course, there are failure bad stories, which I always love showing at my class at CalArts, which was the last 10 minutes of Seven. That was always a great way to end the class. So if you want to see this analysis, it's up on the main Dramatica site at dramatica.com/analysis/The Imitation Game. And you just have to put dashes in there for the spaces. I'll leave a link in the show notes and you can go through and read it. If becoming a certified Dramatica story expert is something that you might be interested in, and I get questions a lot about, well, how is this going to pay off for me in the end? And the only way I can answer that, I can give you speculation as to the more popular and known Dramatica becomes, those who are certified and know exactly how it all works, there will be a huge benefit in the end. That's about all I can say about that. But even if that doesn't happen, the increase in understanding that you will get will translate into any time you're ever working with somebody else or you're writing with somebody else, you'll have this understanding of narrative that you didn't have before. And so to me, it just makes sense to invest in yourself. If you're interested in becoming a certified Dramatica story expert, obviously I'm gonna say the best way is to work with me. I know Dramatica pretty well, I know it all right. And I can help steer you into a greater understanding of it so that when it comes time to do the final analysis, that you breeze through it with flying colors. So what exactly is deliberate storytelling? Well, last Friday, we were on our way down to a presentation for a real-world client, which is creating stories for businesses. And Summer, my girlfriend, who has a really keen interest in Dramatica and has a completely wacky way of seeing the world, very holistic, and a lot of times just drives me nuts because I don't understand a single thing that she's saying, but she has this really keen and intuitive sense of storytelling, and she presented this idea of deliberate storytelling.
No, it's just a conscious way of writing. It's a different way of writing. You're actually deliberately writing something versus somebody just writing something and just going in on it and just like hoping for the best. You're actually consciously writing. That's what Dramatica helps with anyway, and with you going through this process and using those theory of Dramatica to actually... it enhances the writing, which is deliberate writing. You're actually like, you know, you're breaking it down. I can go day to day without any of the information I know now and just like hope for the best. And oh, today's a really shitty day. And then I can go and read this book and learn all these new things. And now when I go throughout my day, I'm consciously creating and living my day instead of just reacting to the things around me. And that's what you do with storytelling. Instead of just consciously reacting and getting frustrated and I don't know what I'm doing or I'm not a writer, you're actually helping people understand that they are writers, that they are deliberately writing pieces through the theory of Dramatica and with your help. Because you're actually helping them. You're holding their hands. They're holding their hands through that, which is a great thing. It's a different way of writing. You're consciously helping them to actually write a story without having to think too much into it, and it'll eventually just a practice.
And I just, for some reason, it just clicked with me because it's everything I've ever wanted to do with narrative first. You know, I have a bunch of different things that I'm doing, like one-on-one consulting, guru story consulting, roadmaps, their Dramatica mentorship program, all these different services. And I know I've felt for a long time it's really confusing to people, like, what do all these things, what's the difference between all of them? And really what I have found has been a great improvement, a great advance in the last month is this idea of just deliberate storytelling. I didn't even realize I was doing it, but apparently I was projecting this into existence, which I will get into in the Patterson analysis, this idea of actual purposeful storytelling, working with the client to actually write the story with them. So the idea is that you bring the story and I provide all the technical stuff, the Dramatica stuff, the theory stuff, and I make sure that the story that you want to tell actually works within a Dramatica story form. And along the way, we can actually have you can have that experience of working with Dramatica and you actually learn it as you go along. So instead of just the straight mentorship program where I presented a bunch of exercises and people did the work, we're actually learning as we go along. So to me, it's more enlightening than just educational, and it's more collaborative than just straight consultation. It's a combination of everything I wanted to do. So over the weekend, I went through and completely threw everything out and reworked the site so that's very simple and very clear. It's just like write with Jim, deliberate storytelling with Jim Hall, which was Summer's idea. I would prefer if it was not as focused on me, but you know, I have the Dramatica knowledge and it's very clear. You get to write with me and shorten the sidebar on the side so it's just listen to the podcast, learn. So if you're looking for articles, contact if you want to contact me, and then subscribe if you want to subscribe all the different ways, the newsletter, RSS feeds, or if you want to become a member. So it's very clear. I like the idea, and I'll be going through and cleaning up a lot of the site so that it just gears towards this one purpose. And it's a very deliberate approach because I want to make sure that I can help out as many people as I can and help them write their stories in such a way that they're the ones that learn the most from it and are able to, you know, make their stories a reality, project their stories into existence. Like I said, over the past couple weeks, I've kind of changed my approach where I, instead of going back and forth, I do a little bit, then the next person, working together in a collaborative sense, I have the artist or the writer or the producer kind of tell me everything that they know, like we'll hit upon a certain part of the narrative, or, you know, we'll figure out the story form ahead of time because I can figure out what it is that you're trying to say with your story and figure out that actual story form. And then we go through and I present, okay, well, how would this apply? And we've been working with somebody who's doing a documentary about based on real world events, and they will go through and it's been really successful. And we've been done a ton of work in just a couple weeks. I believe it was the beginning of September. And we pretty much almost have the entire thing all laid out 3 weeks later, where I will present an aspect of the story form and the writer will give me, well, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And it's a back and forth sort of thing where I kind of interpolate what it is they're saying through the filter of Dramatica and make sure that it fits into the story form and the narrative so everything fits together. And if it doesn't fit in this particular spot, I can find another place for it. And the results have been astronomical. I mean, it's great. Super, really, really excited about being able to focus it and make everything more deliberate. So if you want to know more about that, if you're in the Dramatica Mentorship Program or you have a roadmap coming or anything like that, it's all going to be geared towards the same thing. So you're basically already in it. But if this sounds like something that's really compelling to you and is exactly what you're looking for, so it's not just, oh, I'm just learning this and I'm still not going to know what to do with it. Like, we actually write the story together so that you actually have something. Go ahead and contact me or you can check out the page that I wrote, which was at narrativefirst.com/deliberate-storytelling. And of course, I'll leave a link in the show notes. And if you have any questions, feel free to contact me about it at narrativefirst.com/contact. And I look forward to helping you write your story. So let's talk about Patterson. Patterson is a Jim Jarmusch film that came out earlier this year starring Adam Driver. And it's one of those rare movies that is a completely different experience than what you're used to. Like I said, I was wanting to do an analysis of the one I love, which is kind of my kind of film. I love action, adventure, thriller, those kind of things. This is more of a character study, but it's really interesting. The most compelling aspect of it is it gives you the sense of what it's like to solve problems, not even solve problems, but to experience life through a holistic point of view. I mean, 100% up and down, the main character problem-solving style of this film is holistic. So, you know, for me, it's a bit off-putting. It was hard. I find myself, I don't want to say bored, but detached from the experience. But I loved the chance to see what it was like to see the world that way. And the overriding thing about it, the part that was so compelling and interesting to me, was that, you know, with a linear approach to storytelling, the problem shows up in the first act, and then you have a bunch of symptom and response sort of things that go on through the second act, and then finally the solution shows up at the end, and that solves everything. You know, Luke turns off his targeting computer, or Neo says, "I'm the one," and that solves all the problems, and everybody's happy, and end of story. Yeah, that's great. Woohoo. The thing with a holistic approach to storytelling, which I think works great not only with the material, but also the fact that we're the main character, how they actually see the world, is the idea that problem and solution are there throughout. It's like everything is there. You know, that idea that time is everything that's ever happened or ever will be has already happened. And the same thing happens in this story where both problem and solution are there throughout the entire story, and there's this balance, and it's just a matter of shifting the direction at the end. It's not like he changes, has this huge leap of faith change, and that solves all his problems. He actually just kind of shifts direction. Uh-huh, I see. Uh-huh. That's going to be my impression. Nobody's going to get that unless they get to see Patterson. But yes, uh-huh. That's the whole movie right there. It's great because that uh-huh isn't this solution, yay, we got the goal, it's a successful story. It's more just a shift. It's a change in direction and a shift towards a different approach, a different way of leading your life. So especially for those of us who are creatives, who are out trying to create things, trying to make things happen, it's a really great opportunity to perhaps see the world in a different light. And especially if you are a writer, which you most likely are if you're listening to this, the idea of speculation, of writing something just because there's a chance that it might actually happen. And in this story, speculation is treated as a problem. And it's interesting because there's speculation, an abundance of speculation in the overall story with all the different characters who are speculating as to what's going on in their lives and what could possibly be. But then when you go to the main character, it's a lack of speculation. Like he doesn't even speculate. Every morning he wakes up and he still has a wristwatch. He doesn't have an Apple Watch. He didn't stay up till midnight last week like some people, and buy the Series 3 watch before anybody else could get it. He's not like that. He has just a wristwatch, and he writes poems, and he actually writes them in a journal. I mean, he doesn't use Markdown or Dropbox, and he doesn't keep them all versioned in a Git repository. He actually just writes them down on pen and paper. And the reason why is because he's not speculating that there's a possibility that this could be anything. It's like he has a problem, and it's not really a problem in the way that he's beaten down and he's got this miserable life. He's actually quite happy, but things aren't moving forward. There's a resistance that's built up in him. And when you talk with holistic people or holistic thinkers, a lot of how they see things has to do with resistance and flow, whether or not something is flowing or whether or not there's resistance. So you can think of that problem that he's experiences. He has some resistance in his life because he's not really speculating as to the fact that he could actually make something out of these poems. His girlfriend that he lives with has all these different ideas like, well, you should copy them, write them down, you know, publish them, do something with them. And he's just content with doing what he wants. In fact, his biggest problem that he sees is the mailbox that's kind of like tilted to its side when he comes home at the end of work. He's a bus driver in Patterson, New Jersey. He walks home, the mailbox is kind of tilted off to the side, so he writes it and he walks right in and that's it. he never guesses as to like, where did this happen? Who did this? Like, who's behind all this? Never comes up. And when you watch interviews with Jim Jarmusch and the poet that actually wrote the poems, I feel like they don't address this idea of what's actually really going on with them. And it's either because they know that the people that are interviewing them won't actually understand it, or they just did this subconsciously. But it actually works out into a really great story form. Like, there's an actual concrete narrative. What I just described, which was the problem where he just sees the inequity of the mailbox, and so he writes it, which is that equity part. Those two elements are in the same quad as speculation and projection, which is the opposite side of speculation, in the Dramatica table of story elements. It's undermined under falsehood. And so he is Patterson, the Adam Driver character. His main character domain, what you see, is this idea that he's stuck. He's mentally stuck in a groove. Like, if it's a record player and it's just spinning around, the needle of his life is stuck in this groove and it just keeps looping over and over again. It's fine. It's no problem. You're just repeating the same things over and over again because of that lack of speculation, that void of speculation that's in his life. And it's almost as if he's leading a false life. Like, that lie, that falseness that's there. And at first, you know, I actually didn't see this. Like, I saw the film. I thought it was great. It was very moving, the end. Uh-huh. And then Summer, my girlfriend, she's the one that brought up the idea that everybody in the story is searching for their own self-identity. I didn't see that at all. I just saw a bunch of people sitting around. But then looking back at it, it's really clear to me, again, everybody in the overall story is being driven by speculation. And they have issues of sense of self, like who they are. Like, the two construction workers are trying to establish, you know, who they are with the girls that they missed out on, the dates. There's some anarchists in the bus at a later time, and they're trying to establish their own self-identity. The bartender is playing a game against himself, you know, he's losing. And the actor comes in and he's defining his whole life based on his relationship with this girl, and because she doesn't want anything to do with him, he feels like his entire life is a shambles. It's like just a complete worthlessness. And those two together, so you have the overall story in psychology and the main character through line in mind, that sets up the genre of this story of Patterson. Now, for the influence character of the story, there isn't just one character. It's not just his girlfriend. It's actually Patterson itself, like the history of Patterson underneath the domain of universe, because again, you don't want to keep thinking about it as situation. It's probably best to start thinking of things as the universe domain. This universe of Patterson, New Jersey, that's influencing, that's challenging him, are all the people that have grown up through Patterson and are seen as these heroes or people that made it out or people that actually made a difference. There's the boxer who ended up shooting a bunch of people with a shotgun. There is Costello, of Abbott and Costello. He has his own statue and I guess his own park. And anybody that has made it out or has made a name for themselves or has done something, that city, that force, that universe of collected people has an impact on Patterson himself, the Adam Driver character, because they're being driven by inequity. Like, they're just always just uncomfortable, always moving forward, always making something, always making a difference, always like breaking things up. And it's just that reflection of himself that he sees, or he sees how they actually progressed, that it doesn't flip a switch. Again, it's just this like motion, it's this movement, this force of movement that pushes him into a different area. That's what leads him to change. And then the relationship story through line, which is the relationship between the main character and the influence character, are about the activities, and those are dialed down really low. I mean, he gets into a fight with the actor. He meets this other young girl who's trying to write poems as well. And then he has to walk this dog that he can't stand at all. That relationship story through line, the problems there, it's not huge conflict. It's not conflict that perhaps you would think of in a linear point of view, but it's more the inequities. So holistic people, again, think more of imbalances and balancing things out. And so you get to actually see how a story works when it's just playing with the balance of things. So I can't recommend this movie enough, especially if you are a creative or a writer. And to go through the whole thing, I've pretty much spoiled the entire story form for you, but to go through the whole thing, watch it, and then look at the story form that's on the site at narrativefirst.com/analysis/Patterson, either print it out or just look at it, and go through and see how you can feel these different forces, how the weight of them increases and decreases and pushes against him and actually gets him to a place of change. And that change at the end, like I mentioned before, speculation is the element. So the solution where he actually moves to is projection. And that isn't something that happens at the end. That happens at the very beginning, where his girlfriend wakes up and says, "Hey, I had a dream about we had twins." And he's like, "Oh, that's interesting. That's great." Because he doesn't speculate about what that would be like. She asks him, like, "What do you think?" And he's like, "Well, that's great." But then he starts projecting these twins. Everywhere he looks, he starts seeing twins. And you think, like, oh, this is going to be adding up to something. Like, is he creating his world? Is that what is happening? Is this going to be some great sci-fi thriller? And that's not what's happening. But he is actually creating his world, because he's projecting his experience, what he thinks, into the world. And he's giving that narrative to the world in front of him. And that's when he writes the poems. He's creating that world. He's creating the narrative of that story, and he's projecting it out into there. And those twins are just representations of how he sees the world. And that's exactly what an author does. They look at the subject matter, they look at the material, and they project out the narrative. They take what is there, which I will get into in the next article. They take the infinite amount of different possibilities of existence, and they actually make it a story by projecting out what's most probable, what they actually want to create, what would be an anticipation of what should be there. And that's what actually arises and comes to them. And that's where that deliberate storytelling, that's where that comes from. You're actually taking the infinite possibilities of your story. Like, was my story a concern of being? Is it a concern of the past? Is it a concern of obtaining? Concern of learning? I don't know where my concern is. It keeps bouncing around. That's because there's an infinite amount of possibilities that you can choose from. And then the only time that there's actual movement, when you actually complete that story, when you actually move and get out of that groove, that stuck groove of the record players looping over and over again, is when you actually start projecting and you actually create the narrative that you want to create. Just say, this is where I'm standing. I'm going to look at this element of what actually happened, and I see that as a story concern of being, or I see this as a story concern of the future. And then everything else moves into relation to that. So it's not like there's one right answer. There's infinite amount of possibilities. There isn't one set story form that's right. That's how we're able to do the real world stuff when we actually work with people trying in businesses trying to create their story. We just try to find out what it is that they're trying to say, what is it that they're trying to project out into the audience, and that's what becomes the narrative. And this is the thing, it's like all this stuff happened at once. It's like the deliberate storytelling that Summer came up with or presented to me was last Friday, and then I saw Patterson Saturday night, and then Sunday I wrote the whole thing about deliberate storytelling, and then just this morning I read the chapter about Schrodinger's cat, and I completely throw out the one I love analysis, and I'm just so excited, because this is exactly what everything, this is what narrative first is all about, is actually projecting your intent, creating the narrative that you want to create, whether it's a novel or a play or a film or a real world story that you want to tell, just projecting that out into there so that you can move out of the groove of constantly guessing and constantly just creating spec work, and to move beyond just being stuck in that same loop over and over again. So again, if you have a chance, it's available for streaming now or download, Patterson starring Adam Driver, and I know you're going to love it. I also went and did a through line Thursday, did the through lines of Patterson up there so you can get a visual representation of what that is like. And I'll likely do a story forming too, because I just find it so great that it's this holistic understanding of it. You know, I had no idea what the story form was after I saw it. In fact, I was like, I think I'm just going to say there isn't a story form. And it wasn't until Summer, who's more of a holistic type thinker, who presented this idea of the fact that it's everybody's self-identity. They're searching for that. And from there, I was able to really see what was going on. It's not something that I could intuitively get. I could kind of feel that, well, I mean, I think it's 95 or 98% of Rotten Tomatoes, which is usually a good sign that there's a complete story form in there. But I didn't latch on to it, because I'm a predominantly linear thinker, and linear thinkers have a hard time empathizing with holistic thinking. It's kind of, it's just wacky, like, why would you ever think of that? Like, why does the experience matter? That makes no sense to me. Like, the holistic thinkers are always like, well, you know, it's the experience that matters. And it's like, well, what do you mean? Why does that even matter? I just know about the process of things, like getting things done. But it's actually that knowing of going through all that stuff that he goes through and all those experiences with all those people that he meets that eventually pushes him towards a place where he can start projecting. And then finally, I want to talk about the article this week, which I basically covered in the Patterson analysis, but I want to just wrap things up with "Your Story is Schrodinger's Cat." There's some blog posts. It's always fun to read stuff from people who are completely frustrated and annoyed with Dramatica and can't stand it and thinks it's a bunch of malarkey. So it's always fun to read that stuff and then to try and explain what Dramatica is actually all about so that they, if they ever get to read it, if they ever come back to it, or if they ever see it, or if anybody else sees it, they can actually see what the whole story theory is all about. So on the screenplay forum, somebody left this post. "Looking at the analysis of various movies, I'm kind of struck by the leeway allocated for the categories. An MC problem of trust, for example, would mean that the main character has a hard time trusting people, does not trust people enough, does not trust himself too much, people trust the main character too much or too little, the main character's relationship needs more mutual trust, the main character does not value trust enough as an idea, the main character needs to trust his feelings or instincts or mother's advice, or perhaps even the main character wishes he had a bigger trust fund. This one category could really be many other elements instead," which no, especially if each has just as much leeway. "With some clever wording, main character's problem could potentially be 10 or 15 or 30 other elements besides trust. It is not surprising then, when looking at many of the analyses, it honestly looks like some of the categories are a bit of a stretch where I would have never assigned it unless Dramatica pushed me to. And on top of that, Dramatica gets away with any blatant inconsistencies by saying that obviously that particular movie deviated from Dramatica's perfect theoretical structure. Dramatica is pretty tricky." Well, I would agree with that last statement for sure. The whole point of Dramatica is that there is leeway. The term itself, trust, isn't as important as what that point, that term, actually represents. And once you've established what trust is in your story, which there is a definition to it. Yes, there is a wide scale. It's not just this single little dot. But yes, there is a scale of trust, and trust goes to test. But there is a dividing line where trust flips over into test. Whatever you assign as being, okay, this is where I'm going to plant a flag, this is trust, then everything else around it relates to that point. The Dramatica table of story elements, the story form they do, is a relationship-based model. Like, everything that's in there, it's all about the relationships. It's not about the actual things themselves. It's how they work off each other and the dynamic structures that work together with them. So yes, there are different ways of seeing trust, but once you plant that flag and like, this is trust in my story, once you establish what that story is that you're trying to project, then everything else becomes in relation to trust itself. And as I mentioned, I'm reading Mo Gaudat's Solve for Happy, Engineer Your Path to Joy. He's a Google engineer who wrote this great book about the equation for happiness. And it's sad because he lost his son, but he found joy and happiness in his son's passing. And if you haven't read it, I'll leave a link to it. It's a really great book. And just so happens this week, this morning actually, I sat down and was reading a little bit of it, and he brought up this idea of Schrodinger's cat, which I felt fit perfectly with this idea of creating a narrative structure and projecting your story out there, which fits in perfectly with the whole Patterson experience I had earlier this week, and of course, deliberate storytelling. So in one of the chapters, he writes, and if you don't know Schrodinger's cat, I will explain it to you. The idea is that when unobserved by life, the physical world ceases to exist. So once again, when unobserved by life, the physical world ceases to exist. So the idea is that something doesn't exist unless it's observed. Quantum theory, right? So you think a lot of what Melanie goes over sounds crazy. Well, now let's try and get some quantum theory into understanding exactly what the Dramatica story form is. So when unobserved by life, the physical world ceases to exist. Schrodinger's, and I'm reading from Solve for Happy. "Schrodinger's cat is a famous illustration of this. In this thought experiment, a cat is placed into a steel chamber along with a device that contains a substance that might kill it. The device is activated to release the possible poison via a random event that we can't control and cannot predict from outside the box. Since we can't know, according to quantum laws, the cat can be in any state on the probability wave function and accordingly is both dead and alive in what is called a superposition of states. It's only when we break open the box and observe or measure the condition of the cat that the superposition is lost and the cat becomes one or the other, alive or dead. This is the observer's paradox. The observation creates the outcome, and the outcome doesn't exist unless the measurement is made. This is what happens when an author decides upon a story form for the story they're telling. You know, there's infinite amount of possibilities. I know they talked about the probability wave, and maybe I have probability and possibility flipped, but I don't think so. There's infinite amount of possibilities, tons of speculation that go on there, but it's only once you project and you actually take that infinite wave number of possibilities and make it a singular instance that you make that as your story form. So once you observe the events, you know, when you look at the real world, and it's like, well, how do you use Dramatica to tell the story of what actually happened in the real world? Well, there's an infinite amount of possibilities of narratives. It all depends on what the scope of the narrative, what you're looking at, and where you start positioning the different relative elements, because they all work in relationships, to tell that story. Once you observe, and you observe like, this is going to be the concern of my story, whether or not you put it in being or future, there is no right answer except what you are seeing, what you are observing. So you're in the superposition, you're outside the box. And your story is Schrodinger's cat. It's there. It could die if you don't actually finish it and you just spend years and years learning Dramatica. Or it could be alive and everything could be fine. It's only once you observe it and you create a story form, you apply a story form to your material, that it actually becomes a reality. So he goes on to talk about Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, which is that our own act of observation changes the reality of the world we observe. Remember in Patterson, his projection of, you know, hearing about the twins and like, oh, okay, well now I'm going to start seeing, he's making his world. He's making a reality through his poetry, through his art. He's making the world what it is. He's projecting. So the uncertainty principle suggests that the physical world, the world all around us, is observer dependent. Without an observer, in other words, everything would remain a wave of endless probabilities. Should be possibilities, right? You and I and every other life form are not a product of the physical world. It is a product of us, because by observing it, we make the physical world what it is. So just translate that into storytelling. The uncertainty principle suggests that the story world, the story that we're trying to write, is observer dependent. Without an observer or author, in other words, everything would remain a wave of endless possibilities. You and I and every other life form, so basically characters, are not a product of the story. The story is a product of us, because by observing it, we make the story what it is. The author creates the story by creating a story form, by observing it, by saying this is the main character, this is the influence character. There isn't one right answer. There isn't one super answer. It's the answer that you as the author are trying to communicate to your audience, what you're actually trying to say. What are you trying to project out there? And the story form just holds that all together. The Dramatica story form holds that all together so that it can be a consistent message, so that you're not bouncing all over the place and consistently changing, well, the cat's alive, the cat's dead. You're constantly changing your observation, where you're standing. No, you're making an observation and you're saying, this is the story I want to tell, this is the meaning I want to get across, and that's what the story form tells. That's what the story form communicates. So when it comes to, like, let's say a concern of being, which in the new terminology is playing a role, but I am getting back to the original terminology. So a concern of being, it could be something as simple as, a couple weeks back I was talking about the Lego Batman movie and the slogan, be yourself, and if you can't be yourself, be Batman. So the whole concern of that film, where all the conflict is coming from, is in the being. Right? So that's one interpretation of being. Another could be like The Incredibles, where they're trying to be something they're not. They're all superheroes, but they're no longer allowed to be superheroes, and the conflict comes from trying to be something that you're actually not. Or it could be something as simple or as obvious as being John Malkovich. Like, all the conflict comes with people trying to be John Malkovich in that film. And in the analysis of The One I Love, which I will get to next week, all the conflict is there is this idea of being happy, of just existing. It's not even like, you know, to actually be something. It's living in a state of just being. and being happy with the person that you're with instead of being happy with the person you wish they were. And that's where a lot of the conflict in that story comes from. So yes, there is a wide range. It's not just, you know, this one version of being, and yes, there's 15, 20, 30 different interpretations of being, but once you establish that as the actual concern of the story, then everything else falls into a place and isn't actually in relationship to that. So once that is the overall story concern of the one I love, then the relationship story concern falls into doing, so that the activities between the main character and influence character are what actually create the problems. And in the one I love, there is, you know, they are having relations with their doppelgangers, with their doubles, and whether or not they're doing it or not in this private estate up in Ojai over this weekend retreat, that's what's creating conflict within their relationship. Same thing with The Incredibles. It's a different instance of it. But the actual doing, the quote-unquote cheating behind their backs where he's out doing the superhero stuff that he shouldn't be doing is creating tension in their relationship. And then it's different in the Lego Batman movie where, you know, everybody's supposed to be Batman, but in the relationship between Batman and Robin, the Dick Grayson character, it's the different things that they do together as father and son. But you see, it's the relationship between where we set the overall story concern, where we projected out the story form and saw, okay, there's an infinite amount of possibilities of this story I'm telling, but what I'm going to focus on here is I want to make the overall story concern being, and then everything else, the main character, the influence character, and the relationship story through lines work in relation to that overall story through line. So it's not the labels themselves, it's their relations, it's their relationship to others. Once you've defined this certain instance as being, that creates the story form. Once you've transformed the infinite waveform of possibilities, all the different stories you could tell, everything that could be going on inside that box, once you've projected that story form onto the story itself, then you've taken that infinite waveform and created a single instance. You've transformed that infinite waveform of possibilities into a single particle of probability. Now there's anticipation. Now there's a story that's actually going to happen because you've projected it into existence. So that's what we as authors do. And like I said at the beginning of the podcast, this might be one that you want to go back over and listen to again and, you know, watch Patterson and get an idea of the experience of creating the world around you, of creating the story, of writing down what it is that you want to see. And then that actually is what happens. That's how you practice deliberate storytelling, is you project it out there. You actually write down what it is you want. You project the story that you want to tell, and then you actually make it a reality. That's it for this week's podcast. If you have any questions or you'd like to start this process of deliberate storytelling, feel free to contact me at narrativefirst.com/contact, or you can visit the website narrativefirst.com/deliberate storytelling. I hope you have a great week of writing, a purposeful week of writing, and I hope you have a great experience this week, and I will see you next time.